Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, best-selling author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. And this is Sell or Die. Real world sales talk. No bullshit, no tricks. Just how to make sales whether you're in Cleveland or Calgary.
And we're interviewing the best minds on selling and personal development. And we're doing it live. Why live? Because you make sales live in the moment. There's no pre-taping. You might read a script a little bit, but there's no pre-taping. Your sales presentation is live. And we're live from New York this week.
And as always, we're taking your sales questions. So send them to us on Twitter, at Gittimer, or at Jen in a New York Minute. Maybe you want to email your question, or maybe you want to advertise on this show. You can email that to sellordie@gittimer.com.
Yeah, if you want to advertise especially, just send us your credit card. We'll take care of it. Oh, and your expiration date.
Yeah, and the three-digit or four-digit code.
Right, of course. Unless it's Amex.
Your zip code.
We have four digits.
Anyway.
Oh, reading every single one of your questions, the man behind the glass, and back in Charlotte, North Carolina. Is this amazing? Is this technology amazing or what?
This is pretty cool.
The great Doug Branson. Hey, Doug.
Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jennifer. A reminder to all of our listeners out there, you can listen to us live on Wednesdays at blogtalkradio.com/sellordie. And make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Sell or Die. And while you're there, leave us a 5-star review. Help great salespeople like yourself find this podcast. Jeffrey, Jennifer, what's going on in your sales world?
Well, we're working our asses off in New York City right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. And if you the bullshit here runs pretty much from the Battery Tunnel all the way up to Harlem.
All right.
Yesterday, we went to LinkedIn's headquarters. It's in the Empire State Building.
LinkedIn,
that was really cool.
LinkedIn has 5 floors in the New York, in the Empire State Building. And the guy who toured us took us to the top of the Empire State Building and then the top of the tower on the 102nd floor, which is very rare to get to. And
well, with no line.
Yeah, there's no line, right.
The guy just walked right in. Executive card, and we just...
There's 1,000 people, and we just walked right by everybody.
We just walked by everyone.
It's totally awesome.
Cool.
But I will tell you that I have kind of vertigo, so as I was going up, I was sort of shriveling up.
You can check out pictures on our Instagram, but yeah. We're going to be doing a lot more.
I posted one on Instagram.
Cool.
Go to at Jeffrey Gittimer, and you can see my picture from the 96th floor. Totally cool.
It's pretty cool. Okay, so we have someone exciting sitting here with us in our New York office over here. Oh, she's really excited.
All right.
All right, it's Natalie Kathleen. Hi, Natalie.
Hi.
She has 2 first names.
I know, she's 2 first names. I love it.
What's your middle name? Smith?
Oh, I like Smith. Natalie Smith Kathleen. That's the new one. Yep. As of right now, Natalie Smith Kathleen. Here we are, live in New York City.
Live in New York. So Natalie is the founder of Jibs, and Jibs is, well, if you don't know what Jibs is, you're really missing out. That's all I have to say. TheJibsLife.com. And is that the website?
Yeah.
TheJibsLife.com. And Jibs are the most amazing sneakers on the planet. But the reason we have Natalie here is because, oh, there's a little vacuuming going on next door. How cool is that?
Yeah, right, live radio, baby.
Really live. We are really live. They're cleaning the offices
live
here.
Live from the maintenance department. We're vacuuming our way to success here in New York City.
You never know what you're writing.
I broke my knuckles banging on the glass.
Anyway, we are excited to be talking to Natalie because she has grown the shoe business from one sneaker to thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, and it is really cool what she has got going on. So
right, she sold about 1,000 of them to us.
Yeah, pretty much 1,001, and second delivery tomorrow. Yeah.
In this particular office space, there's about 80-some units.
Yep.
And 75 of them have Jibs on.
Have Jibs on. Everyone here is walking around with Jibs. They're the coolest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to be discussing going for the goal with goals guy, Gary Ryan Blair, a friend of mine. He is a best-selling author who has some interesting thoughts on setting and actually achieving your goals. So, okay, let's do it. It's time to sell or die.
First, let's head back to our studio, Doug and Charlotte.
Boom.
We have more sales questions.
Requiring two upgrades.
Doug. Who's the first question of the week?
First question of the week comes from reddit.com/r/salesuserhypnosister writes, I work in an electronics store. I sell TVs, smartwatches, phones, headphones, and other gadgets. It's my first sales job, and I want to get my numbers up. If someone comes into the store and says, I'm just browsing, how do I turn that into a sale?
You say, were you just browsing for a television, or were you looking for a new car?
And it'll make them laugh.
Smile, and they'll smile,
yeah.
And then they'll tell you why they were there. The object of greeting a customer is to engage them. You don't say, can I help you? You don't ask them a general question. You try to get something specific so that they give you a specific answer and response.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. You add humor and make them... Yeah. Just make it fun.
Right. I mean, some people ask stupid, obvious questions, and I've been answering them all my life, so I tend to be a little bit more humorous / cynical. So, for example, if I go to a hotel.
Checking in.
I go, no, I'm here for my hair transplant. And either they get it and they laugh or they don't get it, and I know who I'm dealing with immediately. But the bottom line is, Hypnosister. If you're looking to engage your customer, the best way to do it is with a question that has a little bit of a smile attached to it.
Awesome. All right. Next question comes from Emaciated Pecan. Emaciated Pecan.
Where
do these people get these names?
These are real usernames from real salespeople on reddit.com/r/.
Like in Tallahassee or something?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. All right. Keep going. Sorry.
All right. Emaciated Pecan asks, what has been the greatest fundamental sales technique that you've ever learned, if you had to pick the best few? And I'm going to add an addendum to Emaciated Pecan's question. They can't be your own fundamental sales techniques. What techniques have you learned throughout your life, fundamental sales techniques, some of the best that you've ever learned?
When I had my first retail sales job, my manager said to me, we rely on repeat and referral business. And so I was selling clothing at the time. Never let anyone walk out of here with something that looks horrible on them. And I just thought at first, but I have to make sales. I'm commissioned. I have to sell. And then I got it. And so she taught me what I now call, it wasn't named this then, the positive negative. If something looks bad on someone, I don't tell them it looks bad on you. Instead, I say, hey, you know what? I have something that's going to look so great, even better than what you have on now. And I make sure to put them in, if I'm selling clothing, to put them in the best outfit, make them look their best, make them feel their best. And that's the trick. No matter what you're selling, whether it's clothing, whether it's a service that's going to make them feel their best, whether it's a product, have them leave with the right thing.
My dad taught me that if you take the sale away from the person, you can tell if they really want it or not.
Hmm.
And so it's called the negative sale, but you say, you know, this probably is not for you because there's a certain qualification you have to go through, and I don't know whether you're really interested in that or not. Oh, I'm interested. And that way you know if they want it or they don't want it. And in my early days of selling, I had a bunch of guys out on the road and they would interview the husband and wife to see if they wanted to come into our program. And the husband and wife with this kid interviewing them got into a fight, like literally got into a fight. And the kid calls me up on the phone, the sales kid, and says, Mr. Goodenrot, we're going to have to disqualify these people. They're fighting. And the guy grabs the phone away from my sales guy and says, no, we're in.
That's amazing.
He learned the takeaway sale unbelievably at that moment in his life.
That's pretty cool. Thank you, Reddit users. those are great questions, and we'll try to answer more if we have time at the end of the show.
Yeah,
but just
you never
remember,
know if we have time or not.
Yeah, we don't know.
Because
but
I have a feeling Natalie's going to run over.
I feel like you guys like to talk a lot.
Natalie, by the way, for those of you who are listening, has lipstick on.
Just in case you were wondering.
Right, she dressed up for the radio
for the radio show. You know, always, that's the sales technique.
Exactly.
The best part.
Okay, so if you're just joining us, if you have a question and you'd like to email us, just send an email to sellordie@gittimer.com. Now, the moment we've been waiting for, our guest, Natalie Kathleen, the founder of Jibs, the most amazing shoes on the planet, and a true businesswoman who works her ass off. Sometimes I'm here at 10 p.m., and I look around, and it looks like I'm the only person here. And then I look behind me into the office on the left, and it's actually that Natalie and I are the only people here. She works her ass off, and I want to hear what she's doing because it's working. Your shoes are exploding.
She's launching her business by working from early in the morning until late at night, and then hard in between. And when she goes home, she thinks about her business all night.
Well, it's definitely a always on mentality, but it's also, I think I grow the business with a always having fun mentality. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not enjoying it, I'm doing something wrong. And
well,
so
like
I kind of, if I catch myself feeling like it's strenuous, it is long hours and it's not working, I make sure I stop and reanalyze what I'm doing. I also know like the hours I'm in here, the same thing. We live our jobs all the time, and we use it to live a good life. And when I'm not here working long hours, I'm probably in Brazil where the shoes are made, or I'm in the UK
where
the distributors
are. Oh, what a tough place to be.
I even was out with some investors in Mexico a few weeks ago. So
I don't know. I saw some beach pictures.
Pictures
happening.
So, but you're launching a company. I mean, you're literally, you're starting from scratch, and you're working on sales and everything else.
Yeah, that's the thing. And you know what? This is the second company I've launched and grown in this already. My last one, it was a handbag company. It started 10 years ago. And where we're at a year into the Jibs, a year 2 days ago, I think, is the year in.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. We have far bypassed what I was able to do in 10 years in just the amount of growth and the potential and the connections and the partnerships that are in place. And I think a lot of it does have to do with sort of that work ethic of doing what feels right and trying not to go by the book, really like focusing on the what it is we're doing and allowing the how to fall into place.
Yeah, so a lot of salespeople listen to our show, and I want them to realize that even if you don't own your own business, like Natalie, you're the CEO of your own territory, and you're the manager of whatever it is you're selling. And so you're going to offer us a lot of tips over the next 20 minutes or so that everyone should really be listening to.
Yeah, how do you make that sale?
How do I make the sale? I mean, and the sale to me, actually, and just tying into the last one about wearing, like I used to always call it wearing all the hats, and this time I call it the buckets. And so it's like jumping in and out of buckets, kind of in trying to single task and focus. And I would say there's sales aspects, not just in the straight up selling the product, whether it's to a one-on-one customer or to a distributor agent or to a retail store. I'm also selling my factory. I'm selling them on who we are. Mm-hmm. And why they should work with us, why they should give us the rates that I want.
Yeah, but your shoes are well designed. I mean, for those of you not listening, J-I-B-S, and it's jibslife.com.
Hmm? Yeah, that works.
Jibslife.com. You should go and just, you know, go to the website and take a look at it. I think that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity for you to buy a pair yourself.
Of course. So, but yeah, on the sale, I mean, we make the sale, I like to make the sale in the pull technique as much as we can. It's not always the way, but there's been a beautiful part of growing this organically, and maybe some of the ethos that I bring into building the business that have allowed us to kind of plant seeds and allow the sales to come towards us.
Oh, I like that.
Are you selling one pair at a time or a bunch of pairs at a time?
You know, mostly 1 to 3 pairs, direct to consumer.
Mm-hmm.
I think our price point wise, we get people that right away will buy a couple pairs for themselves and a pair for their wife. Or
we
their,
have five
their husband
pairs in this
office
right now.
This is pretty much the second showroom next door. Yeah.
But it's the people, the reason we bought pairs is not because of Natalie. We bought the shoes because
of
Natalie.
We love Natalie.
And they're comfortable.
Right.
And they're well designed.
And they go with everything.
Yeah, they go with everything, yeah.
So on your website, on your homepage, you have, and maybe one of your ethos, it says, produce the dots, connect the talent, and create the moments. What does that mean, and how do you relate it to making sales?
Yeah, great. That's actually from nataliekathleen.com, my consulting website there. And that's definitely a summary of what I've learned over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the planting seeds falls into that. And it would be creating an environment that allows the sale to happen as natural as possible, I believe would be the way it would work. Is like, it's not, you get people engaged that then they're interested to want the sale. So there's something, the why, you know, why do they stumble upon the product? And then I agree, it's like they're buying it not because of the product, they're buying it because there's something engaging that makes them want to say, try it on, whether that's buying it, receiving it, putting their foot into it, or being at an event, putting their foot in it. And then it's the comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And the, oh my God, this feels really good. This looks different. This is kind of odd, but it's cool. And then that's the close the sale.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a lot of repeat customers, and I really feel that is the strength of the product. So they get it, and they then feel a loud opposite of buyer's remorse. They actually really like it.
Yeah.
And also we follow up. You get your general sort of, here's your purchase order, right after you click the automatic. And then we follow up additionally. And we say, and typically it's me because I love this part of the business. It's really hard to pass this on as we grow. But I will congratulate them on their joining the Jibs journey. I will then validate, if any of you shoppers out there, you'll see this when you after you make your purchase. Then I will validate your purchase because there's always a good reason why you chose black, red, blue, green, one pair, two pairs. I can tell you bought it for your family. I'll even go
gold
as far
silver.
As like Google your name and check if you ordered before. I'll go on Facebook and see if I know you or one of my partners know you. And, you know, I'll spend 10 minutes building that email. And then I'll say, hey, if I don't know who you are, I'll go, I'm always curious. How did you hear about us?
Mm-hmm.
And the stories that have come back are what fuels me on these long nights. Full circle
cool.
here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, the stories.
So find your why. Is
find
that
your why.
Recommendation?
Find your why.
Cool.
Yeah.
And Natalie, what does that validation do? What is that serving?
The validation of when they email back with their story.
Well, when you so why validation? Why do you take that approach after the sale?
You know, I think we all like to be, I like to be sold to. Like if I go in a store and even if I know what I want that salesperson to tell me why that's amazing.
You want help, you want service,
I don't know, it's a personal thing. I like to be validated that I'm making a good choice. I have money, I can spend it anywhere. There's a million shoes, a million lipsticks, there's a million everything out there in the world. So if I go shopping, I want to be like, awesome, I'm making a good decision.
Yeah.
And you want someone to say you made a great decision, like how do I look?
It's your confidence in it. It's not.
I don't know why I do what I do a lot of times, but that's exactly it. Most of our customers are buying online, probably in their bed, on a train, like by themselves. It's a singular experience. So when I email back with my personal email, that even says CEO, and I say, "Hey, I personally looked and said you ordered this color of shoe, and it's going to be great for you." It's that validation.
Well, you know what's so cool is that. When I purchase shoes online, wherever, Saks, wherever, Zappos, no one's emailing me back. I might get an automated email, but you're saying you spend 5-10 minutes looking at the customer, looking at them online, figuring out how the connection. What do you think that does for long-term relationships, for your business? You know, that's an investment in time.
It is. And definitely any time is expensive. And so we definitely analyze that. And I would say that is a huge, huge asset to how the business has grown. We haven't spent a dollar on marketing, and it's all been word of mouth at how it moves. And one of the things is anyone who owns them knows a lot of people will be like, oh my God, where'd you get those shoes? I've never seen them before. So people are noticing, but if it wasn't a good experience at the purchase, they'd probably be like, oh yeah, it's a brand. But because they get this like feeling of part of this team Jibs, they then go, oh my God, I need to tell you about them. And so they offer the story to the stranger that said, hey, I like your shoes. And now the stranger goes home and picks up their iPad and places an order. And we're seeing that happen.
Wow. So you haven't spent a dollar in marketing, but you did get some free press.
Oh, we did.
So tell us about how you landed a spot on New York City Taxi TV. That's insane.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. Definitely fun. Well, this one definitely hits one of my heartfelt mantras of power of hello. I will be doing a speaking series soon, bringing together a bunch of women, mixed, but mostly some women, female founders in top of their field to talk about how their power of hello and how that really is being courageous and using your power within to get where you want to go. And, you know, I ride my bike everywhere in the city. I was riding my bike to a meeting, probably way too fast, not paying attention where I was going. And then there's a camera crew. And they said, we're interviewing for safety on bikes. And I went, well, I'm the perfect person because I'm not wearing a helmet. And I think I just went through a red light. And so we do a quick interview. And then at the end, I go, can you please take a photo of my shoes? As shameless, another way this business has grown, shameless self-promotion.
Of course.
Always a reason to talk about it. And so then that was a talking point. Talking point's always good. Within a few minutes, they said, hey, your whole story. Oh, and that morning, I'd actually accepted an intern. And the last question that tied the deal of her coming all the way from Glasgow to come join our company was, do you ride a bicycle?
What?
And she said, I've kind of done those like city things in Melbourne. And I'm like, perfect, because we deliver shoes by bike and we actually like to like have fun heading to a meeting. So if you can get on a bike and come with me to a meeting, you can be my assistant, but I don't want to take the train. And so I told this to these guys right there and then. They grabbed their phones and they said, this is a bigger story. I want you to pitch it to our producers. And then we put the email in that afternoon. She emailed back. And within a week, they came to our studio and they got me and my business partner on City Bikes and did a feature segment for ABC News 7, 7 o'clock news. And then that went down so well, and it went down so well for us with phones off the hook that I'd only ever heard of. Yes, people, it happens. And then, they cut it down and put it in Taxi TV.
That is crazy. So the story was about how you hand deliver shoes to people who order from New York.
Correct.
By bike.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And that was, again, very organic just because myself and my business partner has a personal training business. And so we actually met. The business Jibs started with a handshake in the front of a spin class room. He was the instructor. I was a student friend of his. And I was wearing the shoes from the factory in Brazil where they're made. And it was really just me helping them out, kind of checking things. And I was a friend of the classroom that he goes, hey, I like those shoes. Where are they from? I said, Brazil, my friend's factory. Oh, he's like, well, why don't we host a party and see if they can sell in the internationally or in New York to start? And we said, oh, why not? We shook hands and I got on WhatsApp and got hold of the 23-year-old guy that actually runs the family business down in Brazil. And a month later, we had a sample set and host a party.
Okay, you're making it sound so easy. And I know you worked your ass off. So what obstacles have you faced to get sales?
Yeah, all sorts. Oh my God, every day they get bigger and bigger, the obstacles. Time and ability to get things done in just closing sales and getting to the point of having sales is a big one. I think time management is really important, allocating to what's important and what's not.
You don't want to work too long, 14, 15 hours a day max.
Oh my God, max. Steal it from the future, you can't get it back. That's always been a challenge. I think, educating people is another one. You know, I think people want to know, but kind of finding that angle in is the right way. So how, depending who it is I said some of the bigger maybe accounts and stuff like that, you know, there's a million, I've been on both sides of the window, you know, there's a lot of crappy product out there.
Yeah.
You know, buyers are as hungry for a good product as a product is hungry for a buyer.
But if Nordstrom called you up and said, we want these exclusively, would you give them to them exclusively?
If they don't put them on sale, yeah.
Got it.
So, and they don't send any back.
And they don't, that one might be harder. And we have the cash to buy them back if they don't sell them.
Exactly,
yeah, there's some rules in the game.
But, are there obstacles in terms of closing the deal?
Yeah, I mean, a sale isn't as crisp as, yeah, we're going to buy 500,000 shoes and we're going to deliver them. I mean, we have to get them made. Mm-hmm. We have to get them to the specs that are correct. They have to deliver on time.
Yeah.
So that's where all the different operational hats are, is like, at least, you know, if I own all these different areas of the business right now, and I show up to a meeting and the buyer says, okay, we want, realistically, you know, we met with Bloomingdale's the other week and, you know, they take probably 100,000 pairs of shoes in 5 colors and they want them on X delivery date and they want them to come with this type of box and this type of barcode and this type of bag inside, and we'd have to get all that arranged.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden the sale becomes, okay, can we really do it in that time? Because if we say yes and we don't deliver, that doesn't work.
If you say yes and you can't deliver, they try to take the percentage of discount, and that's your profit.
Yeah. A lot. I mean, yeah. There's a whole selling to the wholesale market right now within fashion is a very interesting place, because I have a lot of friends with different fashion brands. A lot of them in sort of the $2 to $10 million annual sales, which means they're selling to department stores if they're US based, and they're cutting checks to Nordstrom, they're cutting checks to Neiman Marcus, because department stores can't sell full price right now. Again, I keep saying like full price, because they just can't, and so they sell it to them for a certain price, but then in 30 days they mark it down, so then you have to pay them the difference.
Yeah, how much? 45. Why do you think department stores can't sell at full price? And that'll give you my answer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's a trickle effect. And now we're tainted as Americans and some other places that everything is on sale. And there's somewhere you can get it on sale.
Well, the online marketplace has made it less expensive to own a business and start a business like yours, for example. And if I'm going to be Zappos, and that's probably a high example, but anybody can now sell on Amazon, mark it down just a little bit, I'm going to buy it cheaper. So you go into a department store, you should Amazon shop it.
Exactly.
You know, so what's the price? Can I get it delivered? And then you one click buy it and you walk out.
It's for sure. And that's why I always say, if you have a product that can be like a widget product, that can be on Amazon. Like, and a lot of things, like even personally, I have a makeup brand I love, and I can buy, I have two ways to buy it. I can buy it for pretty much the same price on the direct website or on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I probably save $5 on Amazon, but I also know I'm gonna get it in 2 days because their shipping is Prime, it's included,
right.
And I'm used to them. So, you know, almost every once in a while, just because I have my own business, I'll order it direct from the company because I know they're making more money. And I also arrive with this beautiful box with a piece of lavender in it. And it's this, it is a beautiful experience. And so I'm paying a couple dollars more and I'm getting the experience. But most of the time, I'm adding it to my cart on Amazon and it's coming with my...
And it's one click.
Yeah, exactly. One click.
Yeah.
So I...
The verb is prime it.
Yeah. It's just prime it.
Private.
I mean, can you imagine having a verb that's named after you? Seriously? That's amazing.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Get it.
Well, how do you jib?
Okay.
Exactly.
So
you
I have
will 5 years
how do you
from now,
jib?
Say, how do you jib?
I like
even
it.
Five, yeah.
I like it. I want to take you back to your first sale.
Okay.
Ooh.
So you're a business owner and you're doing all these, wearing all these hats, but first sale. What was it like? What were you selling?
First in this business?
No.
Oh, ever.
Ever.
Oh, my God. Sales girl at heart. That goes back deep. What did I
say? See, the interesting thing is a lot of entrepreneurs have a business, have a great product, have a great craft, whatever it is they're selling, can't sell. Mm-hmm. You can do both, which is...
That's huge.
It's huge.
Yeah.
I definitely
know how to ask for the order, obviously.
I know how to ask for the order. I'm good at closing. I love negotiating.
What's your trick to closing?
Making both people happy. There is a way. Finding out what they really want and getting them what they want while still getting what you want.
Huh.
Like, that's why the negotiation.
Uh-huh.
It really is like finding that win-win, because then you both leave feeling satisfied.
How young were you when you made your first sale?
I would say
10, 11, 12. Huh?
You know what? Okay, let's see. First sale, I mean, we sold ideas to my parents all the time. But actually, stuff. I sold hemp, if you remember, hemp bracelets and FUMO or whatever.
Hemp?
hemp, you breed this stuff, and you make great
hemp. It's a lot different than the 60s.
I sold hemp, but no. I would say I was easily 10 or younger, and we used this Themo, and my sister and I would make it, and then I would go to like my grandma's old age home, and we set up, and we sold things, I mean, at craft fairs.
Wow.
And I think I'm pretty sure I even sold my sticker collections.
So would you say that it's in your blood kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like you have the desire to do it. I think if you're going to, if you're looking to start your own business, sales have to be a prime piece that has to be in your blood.
I'll even say, like, again, this is my second business, and I have a lot of entrepreneur and definitely fashionpreneurs, and a lot of fashionpreneurs come from design. Mm-hmm. And so they're lacking that sales thing. And mm-hmm. even me with sales in the blood, it can be amazing how I can spend a week and not do sales. And that's what I know when I knew with my last handbag company, it was almost the fear, and you got to really, I'm also very fearless. And I think sales and fearlessness come hand in hand. It's kind of like you already have the no, why not go for the yes?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you got to take that risk without even thinking it's a risk.
Like you already have the no, why don't you go for yes?
Well, I like that too. And I also like what you said earlier about, always saying hello, the first
hello.
The power of hello.
Yeah.
Because I'm from here, and like, no one says hello to anybody here, you know, in New York. And well, so when I started, you know, hanging out with Jeffrey, he would say hi to strangers. And we're in the supermarket, and we're all over. And
do you know them?
Like, do you know them? Who are they? Can you want to introduce? And he's like, I don't know. I'm just saying hi. I'm being friendly. Oh.
Yeah, it can change your day, and you can see it change other people's day.
Oh, yeah.
I've done it in tests, and I also say, like, we're not always on. And I've been told by a few people that I sort of got to know, and they're like, you're always on. And I'm like, when I'm around people, I'm on. I have off days, and I keep myself away from people. and I deal
so
with
it. So it's about knowing when to keep yourself away.
And I can see, and the way about that is like, yes, I always talk to people. And like, say going to the grocery store, I'll have my headphones on, and I'll be on the phone to my friend, my mom, who knows, client. But typically it'll be a friend, and I won't take the headphones off. And I'll say, oh, I'm just at the cash register, hold on. And I'll then have a full-on conversation with the girl behind the register, and they'll turn kind of like you said, do you know them? And they'll be like, who was that? I'm like, oh, I don't know. She was just bagging my groceries. And I figured, like, she's bored with everyone else. And
just
why
nice
not?
And
let's
friendly.
Talk about something.
You're their
I
best
love
customer
that.
Of the day. I'll
I love
just
that. You make their day. Yeah.
And that's the spread of it.
All right. So let's challenge ourselves to make someone's
day. One more
pair
of
jibs
in our closet.
All right. So, Natalie, where do people – more? How do they contact you? How do they say hello?
Ooh, how do they say hello? We've got a lot of channels.
Okay.
We love hellos on Instagram.
Yes.
Follow us at pretty much everything is thejibslife.com. Or sorry,
Jibs, J-I-B-S.
So T-H-E-J-I-B-S-L-I-F-E, The Jibs Life. And that's our Instagram. That's our Twitter. That's our Facebook. And
amazing.
You can email me. I mean, I do love to get emails. Natalie@thejibslife.com.
Cool.
And if I can help you right away, I will. If not, I'll let you know when I can get back to you.
Cool. Get to Natalie straight
Thank
away.
Thank you so
Thank
much
you,
for
Natalie,
joining
for
us today.
Here.
This
and
was awesome.
Perhaps inspiring some people to start their own entrepreneurial life.
Yeah.
And they can have the blank life.
I love it. There's lots to share, guys. Thank you so much. It's been great.
Now,
awesome.
Before we get, and thanks, Natalie. Don't
yes.
let the, you can hang if you want to. You can make
yeah.
comments if you
we
want
to. We
might
get more questions. You're willing
exactly.
to hear.
But before we get really deeper into the show, I want to tell you that we've teamed with our buddies over at Death Wish Coffee. I was just drinking a cup of it. Natalie's drinking a cup of it. Jennifer's drinking a cup of it. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee. Made from the strongest possible combination of perfectly roasted beans.
They have 100%, no bullshit, money back guarantee.
This is our commercial part, by the way. We drink it in the studio. When we do the show, and oh wait, I'm stepping in your line.
That's okay. Go get your first bag of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
That was a great interview, by the way. Natalie is very, very insightful.
And has lipstick on.
You know, you know what part I found extremely interesting? The validation part, though, and obviously I asked a follow-up question on it, but I found it interesting because, so I used to use a cable provider here in Charlotte, and they're a cable provider that got in trouble for bad customer service. And part of that bad customer service is that they wouldn't let you cancel their service very easily. And I had had experience with that in the past, but I had gotten cable with them again, and I went to cancel my subscription thinking that they would try to lower my bill, you know, give me the old, oh, well, we can do this, we can do that, we want to keep you. And they didn't do anything. They just said, okay, you're done, you're good, you're canceled. And I knew it was because, you know, they had gotten in trouble with customer service. But I turned to my wife and I said, I kind of wanted to feel wanted a little bit. Had they validated me at all? Had they expressed maybe just a little bit of interest in keeping me? I may have been convinced, even though I called to cancel.
We I'm not going to mention the bank's name because it wouldn't be fair to BB&T. I had an altercation with the branch manager, and I told her that we were going to be closing our account because of her. And she goes, okay, I'll get you the papers. Like, seriously? So, we're going to.
She did send you an apology in the mail.
Yeah, misspelling my name.
Yeah, and sending you a pen, which was tacky. Right.
But the point of both of those stories is that validation, whether it be at the point of sale or the point of retention, is extremely important to let the customer know that they're valued in some way.
Hold on, Natalie.
You know what's really interesting? So we start a shoe brand. They're made in Brazil. The sizing's mucked up to Americans, you know, and we just went full force with knowing there was going to be problems and being like, at least we're small, we can deal with it. Do you know how many upsells I made by getting the wrong shoes to people? Oh. It was insane. I almost wanted to make it a business model, send the wrong size, because what would happen is, one, they felt so amazing that we went out of our way to call them back.
It's a recovery.
And then they would be like, well, just so you know, my sister actually tried the shoes on and she kind of wants that pair. So I think I'll just buy the other size. And it was, we almost every wrong fitting size, we ended up with doubling or tripling our sales.
That's I had a customer in New Orleans, a car dealership, and they couldn't fix this woman's car. And she went ballistic that the car wasn't ready by 5 o'clock. So the owner of the agency gave this woman his car to take home. Brand new car.
Cool.
She comes back the next day and buys the car. So now it's a philosophy of the dealership that one person doesn't get their car fixed every single night.
That's and they give them hilarious. A brand new car to take home. I love that.
And they're selling 3 or 4 more cars a month as a result.
Wow. Okay, so they did step forward with that.
Wow. All right. So let's talk about the Summer Olympics, because the Summer Olympics are in full force. And while it's creating its normal amount of buzz and excitement around the competition, TV numbers are down. And the usually hot ticket is more like lukewarm in Rio. The stadiums, the events aren't sold out.
Wait a minute. Are you going to, when you go to Brazil, don't you?
Yeah, I go down to see the factory, yeah.
Yeah, where's the factory? Curitiba?
Três Corujas, very south.
Yeah. Okay, so, but you're not going to Rio.
Stop and check out the hotels in Rio, yeah.
Yeah, but are you going to go for the Olympics?
No.
Yeah, you know why? Number one, the crooks are out. Number two, the police are out. Number three, the Zika mosquitoes are out. Number four, some of the best athletes in the world are either banned or not going. And it's dangerous there.
So I see this as like a total parallel to sales, because not just about the tickets not selling, but when there's risk in a sale, risk of Zika.
Or bad word of mouth.
Bad reputation, bad word of mouth, risk of crime. There's fear. People stop buying. And so what can they do to overcome that?
I think it's too late.
Well,
I mean, yeah. There was no positive press. Plus, the fact the government was falling apart. They had a new mayor. There's people being, you know, they ran out of money. Nobody got paid. There was 2 years worth of bad press leading up to the Olympics.
It is the bad press. And I mean, Zika is a big one. I've actually been down to Brazil during Zika. I've been to Nicaragua during Zika. And there's a lot of everyone, oh, what are you doing? And interesting, the Nicaragua was a wedding. And there's a lot of people that didn't go because of it. Mm-hmm. And the biggest fact that came out was there's actually more people that get sick. Oh, what do you get in those countries? Malaria. Uh-huh. There are more malaria cases still. Oh, wow. Zika.
It's just not published.
But it's just the fact that it's not. I mean, I'll just say someone's making a lot of money out of Zika medication. I got.
But there's like a Zika spray, I think. Yeah.
But there's. It's just maybe there's. It's the fear is
the fear, and it's the online buzz that generates so fast.
Hey Doug, why don't we take a few more questions?
Well, let's. I think we have another interview first.
Oh, we do. Oh, yeah. Gary Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary Ryan. We spoke, or actually, you spoke with Gary Ryan Blair. He's known as the Goals Guy. He's the best-selling author of Everything Counts: 52 Remarkable Ways to Inspire Excellence and Drive Results.
Sounds like one a week.
there you go. Yeah, he takes us through his prospects and gives you real advice for setting and achieving your goals. So take a listen to that.
You know, a lot of people set a goal, and I want to know how you structure the process so that a person can actually achieve what it is that they set out to do.
The best example that I give, Jeffrey, is that what you need to do is get yourself a cookbook, anybody. So after this call, even now, just get your hands on one and open it up to any page, whether it's 14, 26, 32. What you'll find, let's just pick right now for a second, Emeril Lagasse. If he's going to be cooking a souffle or a meatloaf or something like that, you're going to notice it's a gorgeous four-color picture, right, Jeffrey?
That is correct. And you see the meal set in front of you, and it looks delicious.
Yeah, that's the final end result. It's absolutely crystal clear. Point number one, that's what you need to do with as it relates to your goal. You need to be able to see the outcome as clear in advance as possible.
I thought you were going to tell me you need to be able to eat your goal.
That's actually probably step number four. From there, let's just look at all the individual components. You know, if you really break it down, I know we're short on time, but they're specific, they're measurable, and time-bound. The ingredients inside that book, very simply, they're precise instructions. They will tell you what's necessary. They'll tell you the specific components of it. Next, they're also measurable. It'll tell you that there's an ounce, a pound of sugar, a pinch of this, or a tablespoon of whatever the ingredient is. And then last, there's time and temperature. And you cook it, preheat it for 350, and you bake it for 40 minutes, and you got your meal done. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you take the time to step back and look at that recipe, what you'll realize is that if you follow that 100% of the time, you will get the outcome that you're looking for. Well, the same thing is true in life, is that goals need to be specific, measurable, and time-bound. You need to be able to follow a specific formula. Now, I tell folks, you know, a terminology I use, Jeffrey, in every one of my workshops is called informed consent. And it's kind of a legal term. Essentially, if, you know, a lawyer will inform you of all your different options, maybe even the best one. And if you choose not to do it, you cannot come back and say, well, you weren't told.
Correct.
I view this, the work that I do, and I'm sure you do as well, as a professional, as somebody who really just transfers important knowledge and you want to do it the best way possible.
Actually, Gary, as a college dropout, I still have 2 years worth of amateur status still left.
Congratulations.
Thanks. But I understand what you mean. People consider themselves professionals and they want to achieve their goals in a professional way. My challenge to you is that as we're talking about this, share the fun way with me the same time you share the professional way.
You know, the fun way really does come down to the idea of, let's just look at money for just a second. When I say a fun way, simple enough, I look at it very pragmatically and try to tie the two together. But let's look at it for a sales rep. 24 hours in a day, there's 60 minutes in a year. Or should we say in an hour? If you do it throughout the course of the day, we know we've got 1,440. If you multiply that bad boy, 1,440 minutes in a day, by 365 days, essentially what you're going to have is 525,600 minutes. Well, if you make a dollar per minute during the course of the year, that's how much money you're going to make. The fun way for me is to sit back and say, what's it going to take in order to make $1 million? Well, $1 million really, if you think about it, looks like $1.91 a minute. So you've got to sit back and ask yourself, what are all the activities that I can do, engage in, so that I generate enough income or revenue that necessitates my time being worth $1.91 per minute every waking minute throughout the day, week, and year?
And how do you direct a person who has just been given a goal by their boss, and they're right now they're at 70 grand a month, and the boss says, you got to be at 100 grand a month. The guy is all aggravated about the fact that he's got to go up to $100,000 a month. What do you tell that guy in order to be able to inspire him or motivate him to get to that goal?
Well, if he's already made quota, let's just assume that. Now, we really don't have a $100,000 sale. We've got a $30,000 sale. And my advice very simply would be to chunk it down, divide and conquer, the same way Jordan would attack a basketball game. You take your 30 grand, break it down by month, break it down by week, same thing as it relates towards by the day, if you will, and then figure out what your cost per revenue that you would generate as it relates towards each one of your clients.
But suppose the sales guy doesn't really like the goal that was given to him and doesn't really think he can reasonably achieve it. What's going to happen then?
I could probably toss that question back to you, but very simply, if you don't like it, it's going to be that much more difficult to be able to achieve it. But I'm of the game that, you know, he who makes the goal, he who has the goal makes the rules. In this case, that's what the boss says. You've got to step up to the plate and hit your quota.
Yeah, I think that's true. But and I've talked about it elsewhere in this lesson. I think it's a matter of intention. I think that if you intend to achieve the goal, you got a much better chance at it than if you don't intend to achieve the goal.
Yeah, you know what? I can't argue with that. The intention part absolutely is right. You know, Jeffrey, I look at it, and I guess I give it a different word. Maybe I look at it maybe a little bit stronger, but I call it personal integrity. You've got to build it, bake it into your concept. And there's kind of three steps to it, if you will. If you make a commitment, you honor it. Make a promise, you keep it. If you set a goal, you achieve it. You've got to go in with a mental mindset that basically says this is the objective. I will not be denied. These are the steps that I'm going to take. I will not deviate. You know, obviously, there's going to be some challenges, but essentially, I am going to achieve this objective, and this is the way that I'm going to go about it. So if that's intention, you know, multiplied with a little bit of oomph or horsepower, so be it.
I think you'd also enter the word belief. I think you have to intend, and I think you have to believe that you can achieve it.
Without a doubt, the mental aspect of selling, as you and I both know, is a large part of this game.
Do you teach in part of your structuring process, do you start out by saying to somebody, listen, if you don't believe you can lose 25 pounds or make $100,000, the odds are you probably won't?
Yeah, but it even goes even further. It's the belief, but then it's also the decision that comes. One of the programs I teach is simply titled The 10 Commandments of Goal Setting. And very often I've looked at systems throughout the years, and everyone has it much more difficult than it needs to be. But the first commandment is, thou shalt be decisive. And the reason why that's so important is nothing happens until a decision is made, whether that's yes or no with a client or yes or no as it relates towards a goal. You know, many people will die broke because they didn't decide to die rich. Many people stay fat because they didn't decide to get themselves a good physical shape.
Or they just go down a path where those sort of small errors in judgment that they repeat over time become a bad habit rather than a good habit.
And they never decide to change them. They've got to become aware and then make a conscious decision that this is going to be the new direction.
And is it better to create goals by yourself or with other people?
You know, it depends on the individual. It always helps to have, you know, a support team with you. Simple enough, because you've got built-in layers of accountability if you take it seriously. So that's really the big play.
Do you think that if a salesperson, or any person for that matter, is accountable for their actions, that they can ultimately, by small amounts, achieve the goal a lot easier than if they're not accountable?
You repeat that one? I think I'm lost on that question.
If a salesperson is accountable, if they have to go to somebody else and say, look what I did, look, Mom, I just finished this, that if there's that built-in accountability, do you think that they're more likely to achieve the goal?
You know, I think if you've got a high performer who is already knows the principles as it relates towards success and achievement, you don't need to babysit a guy like this.
Yeah, I've often said that accountability is a word that's put in there by managers because they feel as though they have to know what their people are doing, but the salesperson does not want to be accountable. They want to sort of do it on their own and then say, hey, look what I did. Are there some secrets that you've learned over the last few years that you'd like to share with people that, you know, you start out being the goals guy, but you end up actually earning the title once you've done it for a decade? Are there things that you're coming up with now that are sort of new awarenesses that you can help people with at a little bit deeper level?
You know, I believe I teach a concept simply called the center of gravity. And this will help anybody selling any type of a product. But The center of gravity as it relates towards all human performance fundamentally answers the question, why do I exist? What are my goals? What am I trying to do? If you take that question and spread it out over the course of just your sales career, you'll realize that, you know, every single product or service, no matter what's sold, has a center of gravity associated with it. And it's either a person focus, a place focus, or a thing focus. So what you need to be able to do is sit back and ask yourself is, where am I going to focus my energies in the marketplace? Perfect example. I mean, McDonald's, for the most part, they have a person focus, that being small children. If you look at a standard chiropractor on a street corner, they're going to have a place focus. They're going to do everything they can in order to maximize and leverage a geographic location. Then if you look at a thing, you say, what would be a thing? Well, this could be a distribution channel. This would what makes Dell so unique in the marketplace. That's their true unique competitive advantage. Well, everybody has a core center of gravity as it relates towards their marketing activities and everything that they do on a day-to-day basis. You expand it a little bit further, and what you need to do is you need to embrace this five-letter word, focus. Now, it's an acronym, Jeffrey, that I've recently trademarked, simply titled Follow One Course Until Successful. Now, what's worked for me, my business either doubled or tripled in size every year for the last 6 years. And it, for the most part, really, it comes down to just understanding and respecting that simple fact. I do everything I can to leverage that this specific area in the marketplace on goals. And to date, we do business with almost 70% of the Fortune 500, and it just continues to grow internationally.
Great stuff there from Gary. You can learn more about him at 100daychallenge.com.
And so, Doug,
do we have any more questions?
Oh, we've got loads of questions.
Let's answer them.
All right, next up comes from Shocky271. This is another user on reddit.com/r/sales. And Shocky writes, I've been in sales for 4 years. I had my personal best last year, doubling my previous best. But this year has been a down year for me. I don't feel like I've done anything different. The results just aren't what they were last year. What do you do if that occurs?
You go back and you visit the last 10 sales that you made. You talk to the people that bought from you and find out why they bought from you. And you basically rejuvenate your soul so that you regain your confidence. And don't think of this as, oh my gosh, is this next guy going to say no to me? When you know why 10 people have said yes to you. And I think if you do that.
Record those.
Yeah,
exactly. Get that on video. Watch it over and over.
If the customer will let you do it, record it on video. Otherwise, just know it in your soul. But understand the customer's why for purchasing from you, and that will help you go to that next sale.
All right, next question comes from Easy as ATC, and they write, I'm 18 and considering a job in sales. Is it worth it going to a university or college and getting a degree? Ideally, I would rather not go and save myself 3 years of my life plus debt, but I am wary it might be a requirement for some jobs in the future, and now would seem like a better time to go rather than during my career. What should I do?
Oh, boy, we might be torn on this one.
Yeah, I know. I would say this. I would say, you're not forced to start college at a certain age. Why don't you take 1 year and get a sales job, see how you like it, because you may not like it and you may want to go back and get a more formal education as something that you're trying for, or you may love it and not need it. I know a lot of friends of mine never went to college, or you can go in the evening. There's things that you can do that will supplement your knowledge and at the same time get you a job that will earn you money.
So I worked all 4 years in college. I'm happy I have a degree. I think that the degree, just having the degree, accelerated my promotions. Mm-hmm. I think there are some promotions I would not have gotten without the degree.
I agree.
And, you know, in sales, a degree shows, and in many jobs, it shows your ability to stick with something and get it done, because sometimes people don't want to go through the whole thing. I get that. And it shows your commitment to seeing it through and closing the deal, so to speak.
It's not a waste of time, that's for certain, unless you're a lousy student. But if you dedicate yourself to becoming excellent at it, someone will see that you got a 4.0 or a 3.6.
Yeah.
Don't just skate through. Go with all your heart.
I don't know. I went to certain classes, and I skipped the ones I didn't really care about that were required. Yeah, but you know what I did? I worked my ass off during the day at my job.
Yeah.
And that's how I got really good at sales.
And it's a great place to make contacts. I think as long as you go there knowing that it's not going to make you the best salesperson, but it could lead to some pretty good contacts for the future.
Sure. You can network. There's alumni. There's all kinds of people that will help you.
Yeah. And a lot of schools have like student-run businesses on campus that will give you experience and networking opportunities.
You could sell popsicles or something.
We had like washy water.
We had washy wash.
I did your laundry, you know.
There's all kinds of things you can do as a salesperson in a university setting.
So not required, but maybe highly recommended.
Do whatever the hell you want.
And then go make a sale.
No, I'm being facetious, but
it's hard
follow
to tell
your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, last one, and this also has to do with learning. User CXM120730 asks, do you think that with training and self-improvement, that anyone can become a great salesperson, or is there a certain aptitude which is required?
Let's go back to Ratatouille.
And, the movie?
Sure.
Yeah. Anyone can cook. So as I think
can
anyone can
again?
Sell. Anyone can cook.
That's pretty good.
I know.
I'm going to Snapchat that later.
Okay, cool. But I think that, in my opinion, is anyone can sell.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of movies about all kinds of people who were, you know, even had handicaps and can, you know, sell the heck out of whatever they believe in. It's not a matter of are you cut out to be a salesperson. Rather, it's do you believe in what you're selling?
Yeah, and there's this fear. Some people have a fear of selling because they think of it as a manipulated.
If you're fearful of that, don't do it.
Well, selling doesn't have to be manipulation.
Yes, it does.
No, it does not. If you think of it as helping, then and you're truly try to help, then yeah, I think anyone who wants to help can sell. And most people are good at heart and do want to help and do want to serve. And
Think of it as a position of help, and I think you're going to do a heck of a lot better.
And the key is to get the right training, like, for example, GetEmOurLearningAcademy.com.
Yeah. So GetEmOurLearningAcademy.com.
Which is a hell of a lot cheaper than college. So my recommendation is sign up for the GetEmOurLearningAcademy, pay your few dollars, and make your own choices.
Well, thank you so much for all of those great questions and comments. Keep them coming. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. Whatever you use to get your podcast, just search Sell or Die and re-listen to these episodes when you need a sales boost of confidence. And if you do have a question, that email again, sellordie@gittimer.com.
Thanks for listening to the Sell or Die podcast. We're back live next week
at our
regular time, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. We'll be in Charlotte. Bookmark blogtalkradio.com/sellordie and come join the conversation that's revolutionizing sales podcasting.
Go to deathwishcoffee.com in the meantime and subscribe like we do. One subscription and you're hooked. Best coffee in the world. And thanks to our guests, Gary Ryan Blair, and especially
Natalie Kathleen
blew it away today with her amazing story of success from one shoe to a million pairs.
Thanks to our producer, Doug Branson, and our technical director, Chris Hill. Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
And I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you to get out there and sell, even if your ass falls off.